going forever. Moments go, time runs out, and then it hits you with the pain. Things are great on the way out, but nobody's with you when you're on the way down. You got what you wish for, is that what you're
Welcome to the Gods to Ghosts Volleyball Podcast and your host, Scott Bemke. Our podcast today features Fred Zulich. Over his playing career, Fred earned 6 open wins on the beach, including the prestigious Manhattan Beach Open title in 1973 alongside partner Bobby Jackson. Outside of the two-man game, Fred also competed each and every year in the Manhattan Beach 6-man tournament, where he earned 4 titles alongside his teammates. In 2016, he was inducted into the California Beach Volleyball Association Hall of Fame. These days, Fred still resides in the South Bay, and his passion now lies in the real estate business, where he serves as a real estate broker for Strand Hill Real Estate Brokerage, and he loves what he does. Let's get started with part 1 of Fred's interview.
Well, I had, 5 or 6 questions that we can maybe go through this evening, depending on how much time you've got here, even if we
only... I've got all the time you need. Don't worry about it. I kind of booked off tonight knowing that we've been trying to get this together, so
okay.
I just came back from a nice massage. I got a glass of wine, and I'm good to go. Can you hear me okay? Because I'm on speaker.
Yeah, I sure can.
Okay, good.
So
go ahead.
Let's start at the beginning. How did you get your start in the sport? And who made the biggest impact on you as a young, impressionable player growing up?
Well, I started the sport kind of ironically different than most. I was a surfer, so I would go down to 42nd Street in El Porto, and which wasn't that far from Marine Street. And I would go surfing every day, but the meatball or blackball would go up at 11 o'clock and go back down at 4. So between 11 and 4... unless you wanted to wander down to the very far end of the beach and surf, you couldn't go out in the water with a board. You had to either body surf or lay in the sand or do something. So in the interim of that, this is when I was just a little bit getting out of high school, I think. I would play volleyball on this court, and I didn't know anything. All I could do was serve. And I used to call it the smoker, because I could serve. I mean, I could serve an entire game and serve the other team off the court. I mean, they weren't that good. We weren't that good. But I could serve a spin serve. Honest to God, we would win 15-0 or sometimes not as much, but nobody ever beat me and my partner because we're not good volleyball players. Bear in mind, we're not good. But I had that one talent. It's like a long drive golfer can't play golf, but he can hit the ball a long way. So it's a similar situation. And then from that, I started watching the tournaments in the Manhattan Beach and Open and, stuff like that. And I began to see something that was similar to what I was doing, but really not very close. And then I went to the high school, and my friend that I played with, we started learning how to set. I remember I didn't know anything about setting, so I'd have to set against a wall until I could kind of figure out what it was. And really, rudimentary volleyball 101. I really didn't know anything. But I got to understand it. I was a basketball player, and I'm still a surfer, and volleyball wasn't any part of my life. But it started to get a little traction. And I think a lot of it started after 68 when I saw that tournament down in Manhattan Beach where parking lot lights went on to continue the match. It was Rundle Bergman playing in Van Hagen. I'll never forget that. And it was something that just, once I saw that, I think unknowingly, it kicked off a, wow, that's great. I was always an athlete in a lot of different things, but this thing was really surprising to me because I'd never seen anything like it, and I'm sure a lot of people, all felt the same way. But because of that, I started learning the game a little differently, trying to learn it from the people that knew it. So now I'm off to El Camino College, junior college. And I started learning the sport from other guys that, you know, that I didn't even know who these people were, but I started watching. And, you know, it's like anything else, Scott. You begin to adapt to things because it's sort of like osmosis. You see what they do, you try to do it, they show you how to do it, and then you just catapult from that point on. So finally, I got pretty decent at two-man volleyball in El Segundo, hitting a rubber ball over a net, trying to bounce it over the fence. That was the whole thing we tried to do. Yeah, we thought that was cool. But we could play volleyball. I mean, it was good volleyball, defense and everything. So I took that to El Camino and was playing outside. And one day, a guy named Ray DelFrancia, probably about 5'5", 5'7", at the most, he caught me and said, "Hey, you can play the game. Would you like to play in a tournament?" And I said, "Well, what are the tournaments? I have nothing. I knew nothing." He goes, "Well, there's a B tournament we can go play in. We're all Bs." So I said, "Yeah, sounds good." Long story short, I won't make it long. I went down and played it, and we won the tournament. I thought that was great. And he said, "Now you're single A." And I go, "Oh, okay, good." Now I learned about the different levels. So through that, you know, I went on El Camino's, you know, indoor co-ed team, and we kind of won everything because we had great players. I wasn't one of them, but we had great players. And then I went down and started learning the tournament scene, and I played in a couple single A's, and I landed with this guy, Tom Thompson, I think that was his name, Thompson, I know his last name, and he was an A, and I was an A. We hooked up, and lo and behold, we won that tournament. This is like an amazing story that I couldn't even repeat.
Right, you won the first two tournaments that you entered yourself into. Not bad.
No, I don't think I spent much time in any of the tournaments. Like an A, I think I played. I'll take that back. It wasn't Tom Thompson. It was a guy named Jeff. Oh, I'll think of his name. He's left-handed, really good guy. He got me into playing the A, and we won the A. The point is I never got a chance to play a lot of tournaments in the category that I was. And I'm not saying I was good. A lot of it had to do with lucky and the partners that I got. But we went, like, I won the B, first B I played in. I won the A, probably the second A I played in. And then, now I'm double A, and I don't know what to do. So I had this guy named Tom Thompson. We played a lot, and we got finishes in double A's, but, you know, that was it. You know, high finishes and kept your double A status. So that was it, you know. And then I transferred to San Diego State. I got a scholarship for indoors with a guy named Duncan McFarland, who was a great, really great indoor player and a good outdoor player. And so I went down there, and I was down there for a very, very short period of time. Now, I'm a double A volleyball player, so I'm pretty good, but not that good, if you know what I mean. You're not as good as the good guys. And there comes the story of the Hare Krishna and Dane Holtzman. This is the fantastic story. Ron has his opinion the way it went. We're very similar, but the way I remember it is, because I was definitely intimidated, I would guess you would say. So he was going to play with Dane Holtzman. Dane, the night before, turned Hare Krishna, which nobody understood what that was, and he came down and told Ronnie, "I can't play. I have to give up all my worldly things. I can't play in tournaments. I'm devoted to Krishna." And Ronnie was like looking at him like a rock. His eyes were so big, he couldn't understand, what does that mean? Can't you just play now and go do it later? No, that's not how it works. So, lo and behold, he was seated first. Now he's not playing with anybody. Ron Lang, and I forget who Ron Lang was playing with. I forget. Somebody Brown. But so now they took over first seed. And so Ronnie was looking around calling, you'll laugh at this, he was calling Henry Bergman in Santa Barbara, he was calling John Ballalay in Corona Del Mar, and George Stepanoff's running the tournament. He goes, "Ron, you do understand that we're going to start the tournament within 30 minutes.
Right.
These guys couldn't even get in their car and get down here that time." That's what Ronnie was doing. He was so dedicated and so myopic and focused and centralized in what he wanted to do that the rest of it just didn't make sense to him. So Now, on my side of it, I was playing in my first tournament. It was an Open with a double-A player named Tom Madison. He was from Santa Barbara. So Tom was on his way down. His bus found out later that his bus broke down, so he couldn't get down there. So meanwhile, I'm looking around. Tom, we can't reach Tom because we didn't have cell phones. Ronnie can't reach anybody. So my friends gather around, and they said, why don't you go ask Ron to play? And I go, yeah, why don't you go do that? I'm not going to do that. I did. I said, no, I'm not. Are you kidding? I mean, we're not in, I don't know what I said, but it was probably to the tune of, we're not in the same planetary system. Why would I go do that? And then Ron got the word. So the word started going around. I think George Stepanoff actually was the instigator, because he said, why don't you go ask Ron to play? And I said, George, I can't do that, you know. So George went to Ron and said, you know, there's a good player over here that doesn't have a partner. He gave my name, because George saw me play down there all the time in Ocean Beach. So Ron came over with his entourage, and my version is he came over and he said, hey, my name is Ron Van Hagen. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm very clear on who you are.
Right.
I guess you heard the story. I said, yeah, I did. I said, that's unfortunate. I know. He said, well, I understand your partner hasn't showed. I said, no. He said, what happened? I said, I have no idea. I don't know where he is. He's coming from Santa Barbara, but he's not here. And his words were very deep in my mind. I never forgot this. He said, okay, well, would you like to play? And I said, absolutely. I said, but I am, you know, I'm a double A player. He goes, don't worry about that. And he said, what side do you play? And I said, well, I play left. And he goes, well, I play left. And he says, it's probably better that you play the right. And I said, no problem. I'll play whatever position you don't want to play. I'm good with that. And he said, now, if your partner shows up, you're going to be playing with your partner. I want you to keep the dedication. I said, absolutely. No problem.
Wow.
And I kind of looked at, no, he was that. That's the way he was. He would not have played. He was dead serious. I knew that just from listening to the way he talked.
It wasn't lip service with him, is what you're saying.
It's what?
It wasn't lip service with him, is what you're saying.
No. Ron Van Hagen didn't give anything remotely close to lip service. When he talked, I didn't even know him that well, but when he talked, I was very clear that he was talking straight language. You didn't have to decipher much. So I said, okay, I agree. And I looked at George. I said, George, get this tournament going ASAP. I've got one chance in a million here. So George got the tournament going. We got in the second seed, which, of course, we probably didn't deserve. And I don't remember all the games, but I was playing right side, and all the teams would block because they knew I wasn't on my side. And actually, I must have played pretty good because I hit past the block, and we won, and we came to the finals of the winner's bracket. No, I'm sorry. We came to the semifinals. We're in fifth place. If you win this, you go to the finals of the winners. But if you win the semis, you automatically get AAA. And in our era, you got to realize, winning a tournament for money wasn't anything. You had to get AAA, which was the best it was.
Right.
That's how we focused. So we were playing against Gene Pfluger. None of these names will make sense to anybody but the people that know. And I forget who his partner was. But anyways, we were playing them, and we had a good match going. And then we were point game, and Gene went up and hit the ball out. And the minute that ball hit the outside, I jumped up and down. I'm AAA. I must have looked like a complete fool. Really, I must have looked like a little kid. It meant a lot to me. And I looked at Ron. I go, I'm AAA. And he goes, okay, let's relax here now. We've got a job to do here. We've got to win this game. Coming up, the finals and winners bracket, we're going to win this tournament. He couldn't give a rat butt about being AAA. He was AAA times 20. And he goes, we got to win the tournament. So, you know, I'm in euphoria land. I'm just happy that I got where I got. I wasn't thinking about winning the tournament. It didn't even cross my mind, just the fact that I was where I didn't even know I could ever get. And the only way I got there was with the best player on the beach. It was truly an anomaly. The planets lined up right. I got the right option. He asked, or I asked. He thinks I asked. I don't think I would do that. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't do that. I didn't have the guts to do that. But anyways, we played. Now we're going to the finals of the winner's bracket. And during the course of playing with him, it dawned on me, because I was paying attention as I'm playing, but I'm almost out of body watching this guy who's the legend who I'm playing with, and I can't kind of watch to see, why is this guy so good? I mean, if you follow what I'm saying, is I'm enjoying what I'm doing, but I'm also paying attention is, how does this guy, why is he so good? Well, let me see what he's doing. And it got to me. The guy was as quick as anybody I've ever seen. When the ball would go to a place where I thought nobody else would get it, he was there in a heartbeat. I mean, he got the balls, and I'm sitting there standing, watching, figuring it's down. He goes and gets it, and two or three times, I didn't even get over there in time because I wasn't aware that he could even get the ball. This is God's truth. And I'm going, whoa, I better wake up. This guy's like a cheetah. And he also had this other philosophy. This is what changed my life in volleyball. I will say this for sure and above anything else. When I got hit balls at me and I didn't dig him, I go, I'm sorry, Ron, I didn't dig it. He goes, hey, this ball goes down. Never forget it. His words were, this ball goes down. I go, what do you mean? He goes, don't worry about digging. Don't worry about the defense. When they serve you, this ball goes down. We side out. That was his philosophy. As simple as apple pie. He didn't care if you dug. You're eventually going to get one up. But sooner or later, if you keep servicing them, I mean, returning the serve and putting the ball down, eventually you're going to outlast him. And that's what he did best. He constantly made sure he put the ball down on a side out and got the ball back, and eventually he just wore the other team down. It's just that simple. And I watched and I go, oh, I get this. Now, for me, putting the ball down wasn't as easy as it was for him, maybe, but I understood his philosophy. It didn't matter if you dug the ball. Sooner or later, you're going to get one or two. But putting the ball down. And to the day after, when I finally got to a level where I thought I was a good player, I never forgot that. It just resonated. This is why the guy is so good. He's so good, so athletic, so in consistent shape that he didn't care about defense. He said, eventually we'll get him, but let's just make sure that we side out. It's all we got to do. So, being a little on the naive side, I was a little bit ahead of myself thinking, God, we could actually win this tournament. And the problem with that is I got it a little too soon, paid a little less attention, and we got beat by Lang in the finals of the winner's bracket. Oh, it was Bobby Brown? I'll think of it. But anyways, so we lost, and we went to the semifinals of the tournament, and we lost there too. So we ended up with third. We went two losses in a row. We never got a chance because I wanted to get back to the Lang and Brown because I thought, shit, we could beat these guys.
Right.
We could definitely beat these guys. But I wasn't paying attention to the game in front of me, which is, again, a rookie mistake, but you learn.
Right.
I learned more in that tournament than I probably could tell you I learned in any sport I've ever played. I got a real quick dose of what you do and what you don't do. Fortunately, I remembered. So we're done. We're good. Ronnie's happy. Not really. I'm happy. He's just third to him was like losing the whole gosh darn thing. And it was just fun. I mean, I said, boy, I'm happy, and we got third, and third to him is like we didn't even bother wasting our time talking about third. So I'm out in the parking lot. I'm excited. My friends are congratulating me. I feel like I've just, you know, hit the lotto. I'm sitting in my car, and up walks Ron. This is epic. He goes, I want to tell you that you played really good today. And I said, well, thanks. Thank you for taking me and showing me how to play. I appreciate you. He said, no, you really played good. You can almost see him the way he talks. You really played good. You played the other side. You played good. You were very good today. And he probably said it like three times. I said, well, thanks. I appreciate it. He goes, now there's another guy that I want you to start learning to play with. I recommend that you play with this guy. I think you guys will both do well. Not being fair, in my mind, I already had other people that I was thinking about, and I don't even know why or who they were, but they weren't the player that he was telling me about.
Okay.
Guess who that player was?
Bobby Jackson?
Tom
Shimalas? Oh, man.
You wanted me to, because Tom was a double A, I think he was either double A or triple A, I forget. But maybe that's what it was. He wasn't quite triple A yet, and I wasn't interested in playing with a double A player. There it goes, the stupidity on my part. But that was a time that he wanted to hook me up with Tom. Now, I don't know what would have happened, Scott. I really don't even want to guess, but I didn't pay attention. It wasn't in my mind. The minute I left the park, Tom Chamalis wasn't even a name in my book.
Right.
But you don't have to know the rest of the story to figure out that as they went through and he got really good playing with other guys. Played with Mingus, I think, and you know, just a lot of guys. Then he got with Ron, and the legend goes on. And I never thought about it until one day I was talking to Tom, and I said, you know, a long time ago, Ron told me I should play with you. He goes, he did? I don't even think Tom knew about it. And I go, yeah, way back when I got my AAA. And Tommy was a funny guy. He was really had a lot of good humor. He was kind of dry, but he had good sense of humor if you got him a little on the tipsy side. We had a great laugh. But that was probably something that I would have changed, because had I known, who knows, maybe I wouldn't have done it very well, but playing with Tom would have been a treat, because, you know, the story of Tom, he hit the ball as hard as anybody I've ever seen, ever. Up with him.
I've heard. Yeah, we can get to who the best hitters were that you saw back in the
day.
That's
really hard. That's really hard. When we get to that question, I'll give you the ideas, but it's really hard because some guys hit a hard ball, some guys hit a sharp ball, some guys hit it straight down, some guys hit it at you and had velocity and would move up. I mean, there's a lot of guys. I played against most of the good hitters, so I know who they were in my year. But being a great hard hitter wasn't the guy that always won the tournament. The guy that was a smart hitter. Jimmy Mingus wasn't the hardest hitter in the world. He hit it good, but he had shots and he had deception. And he had the second knowledge of knowing where to go. So Jimmy, you know his record, he didn't hit the ball as hard as a lot of guys, but he knew what to do with it. So that's how I got into volleyball, and that's how it got to where the level, and then, you know, the rest of it was just a great career with a lot of great guys.
And were there any particular players at that time period that you really looked up to? I mean, obviously Von Hagen, but were there any others from that era that you enjoyed watching and just were blown away by?
I think at the time, this will sound cocky, once I got my AAA with Ron Von Hagen, I wasn't blown away by anybody. In my opinion, and that's to the credit of Ron, I won't give it to myself, it's the credit of Ron, he was the guru of volleyball. Lang was right there with him, obviously, but Ron Von Hagen was the German Superman that I used to hear it in the crowds. Look at him. He's like a German Superman. He doesn't work. That was the tag that he got. So playing with him and winning my AAA, there was nobody that was going to, you know, wow me. Now, Ronnie Lang kind of did, because I always looked at him like everybody else did. How can this short, fat guy play as well as he was? Well, first of all, he wasn't that fat. Second of all, he wasn't as short as you think. He was almost 6'2", 6'1 and a half, I think. Great conversation with him one day and how he got his wins. But I think the people in my era that I was fascinated with that played really good, you had Ron, and then you had the other Ron, then you had a host of guys that were in the middle. Butch May was playing then. I think he was just on his way out. Butch played great. There's a host of other guys. You know, Gene Pfluger played good. Bobby Jones played good. I'm trying to think who the other guys were that were in that era. Chamalis, obviously, when he came up, he was extremely good. But there's a guy, Bill M. Wally, and we had a guy named Toshi Toyota. Did you ever hear that name?
Yeah, I've seen some pictures. He had quite the jump on him, didn't he?
It was ridiculous. I played against him with Mike Carey in Corona. And we went up against Toshi, and I forget who the other guy was. Usually he played with Danny Patterson. But he'd get to serve, and I'd look at him, and you could tell he was little. But then the minute he jumped, he became huge. He was he was over the net looking down, snapping balls at you. And actually, it took your mind off the game. You're going, you're actually watching this, going, well, I got to play this guy, but how's he doing this? And while he's doing it, you're not paying attention to the game. So it took you a little away from it. Carey was the same way. Mike was a good player. He goes, this is incredible. I said, I think it looks like we can dig him, but we can't. So he was very impressive. He was actually a very nice guy, very impressive volleyball player, good AAA player. And he got his own. So we played in that tournament, and that was where Mike Carey and I were both left-siders. And so Mike says, well, who's going to play the left side? I said, I'll tell you what, let's play this. You play left side, I'll play right side on this side. And when we change sides, I'll play left side, you play right side. So that's how we played the tournament. Nobody ever did. Ron actually came over and said, what are you guys doing? I said, well, we're both left-siders. He goes, well, why don't one of you guys decide? And I said, we can't, because we both like the left side. Ronnie was funny, but Mike and I said, that's the only way we could play. We got third, so we didn't do badly. But, you know, it was just kind of an ironic thing that that's how we ended up playing. So a lot of those guys, Bobby Jackson was a good player. Obviously, I won the Manhattan Open with Bobby. He was a good player. And, you know, there was a few other guys. And I think as the era went through, you know, once you got past a little of that time, you got Jimmy Mingus, you got St. John Smith. St. John came along later, but Jimmy and Greg dominated. Greg Lee was a great player, Jimmy. And later came Dane Selznick and then Cooper and Obradovich. So, you know, you really had a lot of good players. Some people would step in for a short time, like Chris Marlowe. So there was a host of great players. Of course, you had Mike Norman, who had a jump beyond anybody. He was actually scary. He would get so high that he would hit the ball at you, and you couldn't even see it. That was the weirdest experience I remember. They called him Stormin' Norman. He was a little wacky. He got a little weird. I think he had a little something going on in his head because he had the mentality of a soldier, and I'm not sure if he was Special Forces, but I know he was in Vietnam. And
yeah, he was a Green Beret.
He was a Green Beret. Okay, that's true. But he had a jump. I think, honest to God, his jump was way over 40 inches. It was like 42, 40. I mean, it was incredible. Incredible. You actually couldn't dig him. It was impossible. He'd hit the ball. Plus, he hit the ball hard. So you had these guys, and you know, then it's just a matter of who you played with and who outlasted them. It was kind of a pretty deep. I actually thought it was pretty deep. In those days, Scott, if you got fourth, you continued to keep a AAA rating. I mean, you got your AAA rating. I don't know if you lost it after 2 years. I forget how it went. But so fourth or better, you're always AAA. And all the good guys, mostly the guys that had stature, would always finish in the top four. Somehow, some way, no matter who they were paired with, they'd finish in the top four. Maybe fifth at the worst, and in an extremely deep tournament, they'd be seventh. So technically, fifth and seventh was double A. But in our books, if you finished fifth or seventh in the Manhattan Open, you were triple A, because it was like 16 to 17 or 18 teams of triple A players, where other tournaments would have like eight. So it was a different competition when you got into the majors, so to speak. And if you could finish in the top four consistently, you were definitely in the top echelon. They actually did a rating when you're top players. I don't even know how they did it. Who was number one, two, three, and so on like that. I don't even know how they did that. But that finished, they didn't stay with that much longer. But it was an era of guys that were, these were great athletes. Steve Sims, you know, Rick Shaw. Kurt
Kilgore?
No, I'll tell you a story about Kurt in a minute. Kurt, gosh darn it, his dad played. Kurt Donaldson. We could talk on this forever. I actually played a tournament with Kurt Donaldson in Hermosa because I couldn't find another player, and he asked me to play. And we ended up playing Rick Shaw and Steve Sims, and we beat him to get fourth, and that was Kurt's way of getting his AAA. So he was like me back in when I played with Ron. He goes, I got my AAA. And I go, I know. But here's what I'm going to tell you. And I told him exactly what Ron said. I'm thinking, oh, God, I'm sounding like the other guy. But it was fun. Kurt Kilgore could have been one of the hardest hitters all around. He played with a guy named Doug Dunlap. They used to call him the Whip. Dunlap would go up and hit a ball, and it would not go down. It would, like, kind of rise at you like a golf ball. So you, when you thought you digging it at your knees, it would hit you in your chest. He's the only guy that ever hit a ball like that. Everybody else hit it with topspin. He hit it with underspin, but he was so tall. He was like 6'5".
Did they call him Lurch or something like that?
Lurch.
Maybe that was I've heard some people maybe make a comment about one of those guys. I thought it was maybe him, but
I remember the name Lurch. I don't know. I don't think it was with him. It could have been, but I think the name that we always got was the Whip.
Okay.
He hit that ball. It just, I mean, it was impossible. So here's Bobby Jackson and I in the 73 Manhattan Open, and we're playing these guys in the finals of the winner's bracket. And all I can remember is, I know who we got through. We got through Ted Dodd, Mike Dodd, which we should have probably lost because Bobby threw the holy living out of the ball, and the guy didn't call it. We went on to win the tournament, win the game. Now we're in the finals of the winner's bracket, and all I can remember is I went up underneath the net to get a ball that was going to come over, and Kurt hit it before it went over, and it hit me in the chest so hard it looked like an aspirin tablet coming at me. I mean, I couldn't even get my hands up. I mean, it was impossible. And this is how they were playing the whole day, and Bobby and I were looking at each other and go, I don't know how to beat these guys.
Right.
I mean, it was a foregone conclusion that we couldn't side out with these guys forever. I mean, they couldn't dig a lot of balls, but they were doing good enough. But we couldn't dig them. I mean, they're virtually, I don't even know if we ever dug a ball. So you'll laugh. This is cute. A guy named Bobby Garcia, who also was a AAA player, but, you know, not of the strongest suit. He was watching the tournament. He came up and we called timeout, and he goes, hey, guys, you're not beating these guys. Really? You've noticed that too, huh? And he goes, go to the sky ball. I said, really? What will that do? He says, well, first of all, they're passing everything you serve them, and they're nailing you with it. So get them a sky ball that'll throw them off a little bit. Oh, sounded like a good idea. Can't lose because we weren't doing any good the other way. So we went back and we served the sky ball and we won the game. That totally changed their whole pass set hit because the guy would pass back there, and instead of being by the net for the set, the guy would be half court trying to set it and took their hit off just enough to where we could dig it. So I'll give Bobby Garcia the high rise on that one because he got us into winning the tournament. And then, of course, you know the rest of it. We went on to play Von Hagen and Gage in the finals. We already got agreement that if we play through it, we're going to play. If we start a game, we're going to finish the game. And we won one game, and then we were on the head of the second game. I forget what the score was, but we were ahead of the second game. And, oh, no, we had the first game. I'm sorry. It was the first game. And I served a couple of smokers, and Ronnie couldn't even see them. It was night. It was black. He couldn't see him, and he stopped, so I'm not playing anymore. And so we all argued, said, no, that's not what we agreed upon. He says, well, I'm not going to play. So everyone's there for about, honest to God, an hour. Bobby Jackson was commissioning on our team, and Von Hagen was commissioning on his team. Gage didn't want to say much. He kind of went along with Ronnie. Charlie Sakely. It looked like a cluster mess. Nobody could settle on anything, so I just stayed out of it because, you know, I already had Bobby doing the work. Lo and behold, they said, well, we'll call you the next couple of days and decide what we're going to decide. So what do you're going to call us and tell us what you decide? I mean, it's 10-8. What are you going to tell us? If I go back and serve the ball, he's not going to return it. He goes, yeah, but he's not going to play. So we go back. I go all the way back down to San Diego. Bobby goes home. They call us on the weekend and they go, okay, we've given you the first game because we feel that you would have gotten it anyways, no matter what, which they were right. But we're going to finish the match on this coming Friday. I said, wait a minute. You're telling me that we're not coming back Monday. We're going to go Friday. We're going to give Ronnie Von Hagen and Matt Gage a chance to regroup, and get all better, and by Friday we're playing them for the finals of the tournament, which we would have won if we would have stayed out there, because that's the vote. Well, I was pissed because I knew that we already, I don't say fluky, but we beat them. Coming back at a guy who's the best in the world, we're not really comfortable coming back. At least I wasn't. So, but that was the way it was. So Bobby and I talked, and I said, okay, I'll meet you down there Friday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Thinking nobody would be down there. We go down there. There's like 400 or 500 people down there. I don't even know how they found out, because I barely found out where we were going to play until the middle of the week. He told me on Sunday we were going to play, but he said didn't tell me when and where. It was back at the tournament, same court, and at 4 o'clock on Friday. So, wow, okay, great. These people all found out. So now we're down there. We're warming up, and Bobby is walking around like a stick man. I go, Bob, what are you doing? You're not snapping. He goes, I didn't want to tell you this, but I tweaked my neck earlier. I said, oh, you're kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. This is a terrible time. Take an aspirin. Do whatever you got to do.
Is that when he played kind of a pickup game with like either Artie Kuvion or Robbie Hudas before your match?
You know, it was. It could have been. I honestly wish I could tell you what it was. I don't know what he did, but whatever he did, I knew that I was angry with him because how could you even think about doing that when we're playing the tournament? I mean, you know, I was taking a little book page out of Ron's book. How could you even consider that? So he's got this tweaked neck, and as it gets a little warmer, it's a little bit better. The other team fortunately doesn't know it. And I just go, well, we're dead. Well, let's go out and play. So we went up to play, and they beat us, I think they beat us 12-2 or 11-2. It was a slaughter. So needless to say, we go back. Now we're playing the third out of 2 out of 3 to 11. And I'm pretty convinced by that point that we're screwed. So we went out and played, and Bobby got warmer. The game got tighter, and they beat us again, 11-8. Okay. So now we have to go 1-15 because we had won the winners. They came up and won the losers. Now we have to play 1-15. You follow me?
Yep.
Okay. Because now we've each got a win, we've each got a loss, we've got to go 1-15 to decide the championship, which is kind of good for the Manhattan Open, but bad for us because the longer we went, Bobby's neck wasn't getting any better. So anyways, now we're off to the game at 15, and we were playing, and it was the longest, one of the best matches I've ever had. I mean, I was watching Ron on the other side do what I've seen him do on my side. He was like a cat. Couldn't get him down. Gage hit balls we couldn't dig. Bobby was playing good. I was playing decent. It was just a great match. We tried blocking him, and we got a few points, but they started getting wise to that. Long story, we just kept playing and playing and playing. Finally, we got down, and we had point game. I don't remember what they had, to be honest with you. It could have been 12, 13, it could have been 11. But I remember hitting a ball very deep, and Ron went back and got it, which I still to this day don't know how he got it because it was definitely down. Went and got it and popped it all the way back to the net. This is like nuts. And so I'm down below the net waiting for the ball to come over, and I see Matt poke the ball, and I see his fingers go over, and the referee goes, you were over, Matt. And just like I was with Ron, we won the tournament. I just jumped up and down. We won the tournament. I think I went crazy. I'm sure I was a banshee right then. We won the tournament.
Who was officiating, and would Von Hagen say? Mike Cook?
Yeah, it was Mike Cook. Yeah.
For the MiraCosta Mustangs there?
Yeah, nobody argued with Cook. When Cook called it, nobody was going to argue. They were angry. Of course, Matt probably put up a fight, and Ronnie did too, because they didn't want to lose. But I clearly saw his hands over, so it wasn't a bad call.
So you're saying, in hindsight, it was absolutely the right call, no 50-50.
Oh, no question. No question. And I think if you went and talked to any of the guys, Matt, Bobby, even Ron, they probably would have agreed. I mean, Ron couldn't see it. Matt didn't want to know that because he felt he did the right thing, but you know, he doesn't know. I don't think he even argued when I talked to him later, because Matt and I became a team later on. We played a lot of games together, matches, tournaments, and so I would always ask him. He goes, I guess I was over. I didn't think I was, but you know, Cook's good. So they succumbed to the fact that's what happened. So there I am, winner of the Manhattan Open. It was like a, I don't want to use the word Cinderella story because it's been used so much. But honest to God, in my mind, I was sitting there, and it just couldn't register with me. We just won not just a tournament. We won the granddaddy, the Wimbledon of all tournaments, the Manhattan Open. It was surreal. I was actually just remember, I can't remember now, but I remember looking around at everything. I was going, wow, what, you know? So you win the Manhattan Open. So here's what we got. These were the they were sponsored by Orville and Wilbur's, which is where I worked as a waiter. we won a pair of sweats, green sweats, by the way, they didn't fit. And we won a dinner at Orville's, which I already worked there. That was our winning. That was it, plus a tour.
What was the name of the restaurant?
Orville and Wilbur's.
Okay.
It was a great restaurant in Manhattan Beach. I was a waiter there. So I got a dinner at my own restaurant that I worked at, and I got a pair of sweats that never fit me. It was hilarious. It was that was funny. Today they probably win $50,000 or, you know, whatever and get lifetime status, but no, that was just what it was. So it was kind of funny.
Your anniversary for that victory just passed this past weekend too, wasn't it? It was like a late August, the 19th, 20th, somewhere around there back in 73.
Pretty much, yeah. They had it this last week. I didn't get down to watch it because I was working, but I read that winners were, you know, Dahlhauser and
Lucena, I think.
Yeah, so it was a good tournament then. But so then they gave out the trophies, and you know, we got that, and then they gave out the sportsmanship award went to Bobby, and then they gave out the most valuable player, and I got it, and I'm sure that wasn't me. I'm sure I didn't deserve it, but I took it. I'm looking at it right now. I'm never going to say I deserved it, but they gave it to me, and I'm looking at it. I'm going, well, you can't take that away. So that was a hell of a fun story. And all these guys that we're talking about, Matt Gage, Toshi, Kurt Kilgore, unfortunate things happened to Kurt that weren't very good. He did a roll and hurt his neck and became paralyzed. But, you know, all these guys were great players.
This concludes part one of our two-part interview with Fred Zulich. Thanks so much for listening. Stay tuned for part two. I want to thank Fred for taking the time to do this interview with me. He's quite the storyteller. He has a rare gift, to put it mildly. If you haven't done so already, please make sure to visit our website, which is completely dedicated to commemorating the history of volleyball. You can find it at godstoghosts.com. I'd also like to quickly give thanks to the musicians that we use for our podcasts. The intro music is from the band Sponge. The song title is Rainin' off the album Rotting Pinata. The closing music credits, which you'll hear shortly, are from the band Magna Carta Cartel. Song title is That It's Already Too Late off the album Good Morning Restrained. Thanks again for listening. Thank you.